This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Thursday, July 3rd, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, USDA says the corn acres are there and the market dropped like a rock Monday. Tuesday, it meekly tried to start something up, and by Wednesday, corn was off to the races again. We'll learn how it closed for the week and much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group headquartered in West Bend, Wisconsin, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Paul Cooley, should farmers sell new crop soybeans?
Well, Todd, the answer to the old crop is that they're very high and they're very bullish. As far as new crop soybeans, I'm going to wait a while before I really advocate that position, mainly because I think the fundamentals are so strong in old crop soybeans, we will see some sort of a pull higher in new crop.
Mike Zuzolo?
Yeah, I think that's right with what we're thinking, Todd. That $17.35 to $18 level on November beans probably be the next place we'll be looking to get some hedges in place with some puts, or if guys want to forward sell because they get a nice premium with their seed beans, probably would look at re-owning up until the September time period. But meal continues to really underpin this market. We had a brand-new all-time high set in July this week of 454.50. That takes out the June 73 high of 451 even, and processors still aren't getting the beans. So the fundamentals sure are strong, like Paul said.
Maybe you better repeat those numbers that you ticked off on the upside for soybeans for new crop. What were your objectives?
Well, the $17.35 to $18 level would be the area that we'd be looking for the next place to get some hedges put back on. But essentially from the May to June low to high, we ran about $2.62 higher. So if you add that to the June low, that would put you right about the $17.35 level. And if you want to go a little bit higher than that, then you couldn't discount the idea of maybe trying to get all the way up to $18.
Jackie Vakes, nobody willing yet to make a new crop sale. How about you?
Well, I'm certainly not interested in making cash new crop sales, but we've been doing some pretty complex put strategies with the idea that we're carrying a very strong and profitable level at this point in time. I think $18 is not unrealistic when you look at the situation. If you take just if we would lose three bushels to the acre on that crop, we're probably going to close out with about a 26 million bushel carryout. That makes for some pretty strong fundamental reason for this market to go higher.
Well, here's the way the numbers finished the week in Chicago. For the soybeans, July contract at $16.63. That's the high for the day, and that's also the high for the week. It's also new contract high. Low at 15.61.5. July settled 16.58, up 76.5 cents from last week. November moving into new contract highs and settling 71.5 cents higher at $16.31. USDA, of course, releasing numbers on Monday morning, acreage and grain stocks reports. In the beans, USDA now says the acreage will settle in at 774.533 million acres, and the grain stocks on hand at this time at 676 million bushels. When do we start, Jackie, to really put some teeth into the rationing side of the soybeans if we don't do it at $16.
Well, I think we still have to be realistic about looking at what the American dollar is doing. We looked at export sales today. Export sales came in on all three commodities above expectations. And if you look at $16 beans, I figured it out day before yesterday, that's $10.66 to China. So it isn't $16 beans to everybody. Granted, you have to put shipping on that, but shipping is shipping. And so I think it's going to take those higher prices to start to slow things down. You look at the hog and pig report again. Now I'm on to the corn side of things, but 6% more pigs on feed than we had a year ago at this time. So it's going to take some higher prices to be able to slow it. And I don't think we're there at $16.
Paul Cooley, what's your estimation of how things will lay out in the next 6 months? Livestock will need bean meal. We'll need bean oil. Will the numbers be there? Is there any reason for this bean market not to continue higher?
Well, we're going to have some bumps in the road, Todd. I think some people are now saying we're going to have a pretty normal weather pattern this summer. The Secretary of Agriculture is probably under extreme pressure to release some CRP acres by the July 11th supply-demand report date. We're also looking at a situation where we'll probably plant some of those flooded out soybean acres back into soybeans. And there's every reason in the world to plant soybeans in South America as well. So we do have a very strong incentive to raise as many soybeans in the world as humanly possible. But we're oversold. We have an Argentine government that's basically can't manage anything at the present time as far as ag marketing is concerned and agriculture. But we do have some very unusual things that will come out here in the next 6 months.
Well, you wrote something down here on a piece of paper. What kind of note did you make to yourself as we were talking?
The July 11th supply-demand report. Yeah. That's when the secretary is supposedly going to announce the CRP
acres. Yes. But you think, regardless of what he does with CRP, that flooded acres in Iowa will go back into beans at this kind of price level, if they can put them into beans, that is?
Well, let's say the government was right about 1.45 million acres.
Right.
I was going to say there's probably a good chance of 1 million acres getting planted again.
Of 1 million acres of?
The flooded acreage.
With corn or with beans or both?
Well, beans. It's too late to plant corn, I think.
So 1 million bean acres. Man, that's a lot of bean acres, and not enough supply there to really, between that and a $16 price. What's a $16 price in Brazil at this time? Does that push them to put bean acres into ground? I guess what I'm really thinking is there a time when you can get back out to next year and say, hey, wait a second, we've got a lot of beans on hand?
Well, I think when you look at, to answer your question about Brazil, push the pencil to it, it looks like it's going to take $20 to even get Brazil interested in expanding bean acres. You have to understand, with their exchange rate right now and where they need to sit to be a competitor of ours to ship beans out to China because of the extra distance they have to go, they have to have their price less than ours. Right now, their price, when you put it back to American dollars, is higher than ours. So it's going to take a tremendous move in the price market to even get them interested at all. It's a whole different world because of the American dollar. It's the same thing with meal when Paul talks about meal. If you look at our meal exports have been picking up and picking up. Some of that is because China can actually buy it from us for less than they can produce it over there.
Zuzulo, you agree with this conversation, I take it?
Well, yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to the exchange rate, Todd, I think the one wild card we're looking at here now is from these outside markets. I think the Fed, because we've gone into a bear market in the stock market now, and we're down 20% on the year, the American person nowadays has their 401k and has their house as primarily their assets and their wealth. We've gotten killed on housing. Now we're in a bear market in the financials. I think maybe the Fed is ready to finally say that they want a strong dollar policy and actually turn hawkish and not cut rates anymore and actually start easing rates back up again. And if that happens, then the crude oil should top first and then the beans would be second. And I think that real dollar ratio that Jackie was talking about, that has been so important the last year and a half. But simply put, from what we see analytically, the corn demand is getting hit right now, but the bean demand so far is not.
Okay, speaking of corn, let's go through some of those numbers as they came out from USDA and then finished up in Chicago for the week. USDA numbers on acreage now stand at 87.327 for acreage planted this year. The March intentions at 86.014, and the average trade guess was at 85.321. USDA says the grain stocks on hand are at 4.028 billion bushels. That's above the average trade guess at 3.894 billion. In Chicago for the week, July had a high of $7.61, a low at $7.03. It settled at $7.46, down 8.75 from last week. December futures at $7.78.5 are down 8.5 cents. Mike Zuzulo, there are a couple of things here I want you to consider. On the weekly, we were down 8.5 cents. Now, we've only traded, 3 days, I guess, in the month, but we're up 20 cents for the month at this point from the Monday close, which is right.
The USDA report is gonna cause this type of reaction where you get a little bit of bullish news and the market goes screaming higher. And, you know, the market kind of told us this week, it seemed to us, Todd, that the shorts were very willing to cover at any sign of bounce or lack of follow-through selling. And I think it goes back to that report when we got the lockup numbers from USDA after the report was released. They came in at 90.4% of planted acres for the harvested corn number. 93, we were at 85.9%. So they essentially said, we're going to take a pass. We'll come back in August. And that brought more uncertainty to the corn market, not less. And it really scared the futures traders a lot this week, and you could see it.
Are you... where do you stand on the corn as compared to the beans and the wheat? I mean, you're obviously, all three of you are obviously bullish the soybeans at this point. Can you be bullish corn still too? And Mike, maybe you'll start, but just are you bullish or not?
I think the weather and the crop conditions and that July 11th report Paul's talking about is going to set us up to whether we can be bullish or not. Short answer, yes, in the short term, if we turn hot and dry and the crop conditions go down.
Okay, well, I would tend to agree. I'm probably a little more bullish long-term, and I think one of the things you had to do on that report on Monday is really dig in. You know, we went down to 90.4 on harvested acres, but nobody's talking about the fact that they took Illinois down from 98.8 and Iowa from 97.5 down to 93.4. That's pretty much unprecedented, and we're talking about when you drop harvested acres, you're normally dropping marginal acres. These are not marginal acres. And so you look at a 5% drop in those states, you can talk about 200 million bushels of corn, you know, in a very conservative way.
You know, I wanted to clarify, you know, out of the 3 million acres supposedly the government said that were flooded, you know, I think 1 million of those acres will get planted back to beans, Todd.
Right.
So that's where I wanted to come from that there. Also,
they said 1.4 million.
Well, of
million,
corn
right.
and bean, but 1.4 beans and I think 1.5 corn, but there'll be some corn beans planted back in those flooded acres, and I think that we will see the bean number get acreage get larger than what the USDA said. Getting back to the another area where I think the government that we were surprised on this last report, that out of the 9 major crops we did have 5 million more acres we talked about than in 2007. And so I think that's it. But to answer your question on the corn, I'm basically turning very neutral in the corn market. I think a lot of the easy money has been made, and it's going to be more of a struggle from here on. And I think you have to be very conservative, here on corn, because we are basically losing demand in several market areas. That isn't going to say that some of our co-panelists aren't going to be right by seeing substantially higher prices because of this and because of that. But I think the easy money has been made in the corn market.
Well, if the easy money has been made, what are you doing to protect the money that you haven't
made?
Well,
once in a while, you don't protect. Sometimes you just watch and stay there with the chips on the table, Todd.
Pooley's
and I think that's a coward way to play the game right now. But I think that buying puts, I think that there is a lot of price strength and stability if the corn market goes below $6.85 or $7 on the December futures. And a lot of my co-panelists buy puts and at $7 and get it down to $6.50. So it really, you know, what I'm saying is why not just wait and see what happens?
So, okay, wait a second. So, Cooley, you're going the coward way. You're not doing anything,
right? Right. I think it's time to go to cash in your chips.
So. Okay, and we've only got a minute. So what way are you doing on
Well, I'm doing put strategies, so I'm doing a lot more complex strategies. I'm certainly not going out and just buying bear put spreads.
And how about you, Mike?
Well, I think we are going to look at puts as we get closer to August. I think we got to keep in mind that wheat and rice market and how it took a 30% to 40% dump after we had that exhaustive phase in those.
All right. In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good from the University of Illinois, and we'll fill out the rest of the numbers as they settled in Chicago at the Mercantile Exchange and at the Board of Trade.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois Water Survey in Champaign. Warm but dry summer weather early this week gave way to increasing temperatures and dew points by midweek as southerly winds became established over Illinois. The increasingly humid and unstable air combined with an approaching cold front brought rain to most parts of the state by the end of the week. Rainfall was particularly heavy in southwestern Illinois, where 1 to 2 inches of rain fell Wednesday night into Thursday morning in northern Madison and southern Macoupin counties. Thunderstorms also dumped some locally heavy rain and produced severe weather in northern Illinois on Wednesday. Temperatures this week averaged 3 to 5 degrees below normal across Illinois. The only really warm day was on Wednesday when high temperatures reached 90 in southern Illinois and the mid to upper 80s across the rest of the state. High pressure will bring us a dry and pleasant weekend, but warmer and more humid weather will begin its return on Monday. That will bring with it a chance for some showers. Chances for rain will increase toward the middle of the week as another cold front pushes slowly south through Illinois. Showers and thunderstorms should be confined to the southern third of Illinois by Thursday and Friday as the front moves towards the Ohio River. All in all, it should be a fairly typical week of summer weather here in Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Thursday, July 3rd, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of Wispend, Wisconsin, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and in his office in Lafayette, Indiana, Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette. Our guest is Darrell Good, Extension Ag Economist from the University of Illinois. You can read Darrell's marketing comments in many newspapers around the country and online at the FarmDoc website. You can even have them delivered directly to your email inbox. Just search Google for FarmDoc and University of Illinois. Darrell, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
And speaking of your online comments, I'd like to take something up from your weekly outlook released Monday. In it, you expect rationing has begun to take place in the corn to the tune of 100 million bushels of an increase in the year-ending stocks. Who's slowed down?
Well, I think since those comments were made, I've become maybe a little more bearish on old crop stocks, Todd. So far, we've seen a slowdown in all three categories. I think some slowdown in ethanol use of corn, some slowdown in feed use, and clearly some slowdown in the export movement of corn. I think all of those numbers, all three, will be probably 50 million bushels less than the USDA had in their last supply-demand report, and that's going to push year-ending stocks probably up closer to 1.6 billion bushels.
Let me ask you, Darrell, when you looked at this is jumping ahead to the fourth quarter grain stocks report that we had last year, you know, that came out at 2.2 billion bushel usage, and the idea that we had planted about 1.2 million more acres down south, and that was early harvested. Now, this year, we reversed that, and we haven't planted it. So when you look at your potential increases, are you at all weighing that with the possibility that we won't see those?
Well, I think
numbers?
The way the USDA does that survey, those old crop stocks or the new crop stocks should be excluded from that report. So the way that survey is done, it's asking strictly what are your old crop inventories. So that theoretically, that should be a wash. How that actually gets reported, I think, is an important question.
Well, one of the questions, and I went to the USDA with this, and the thing that they can't track is the number of new crop stocks that went out of the South that didn't take old crop south out of the Midwest. You're right. All they did was ask, basically, what do you have for old crops? They never bothered to try and figure out if there was a lot of new crop that went out in the export market. But when you looked at the export numbers, it certainly looked that way.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it in enough detail to really respond.
So on clarification, that was from a year ago that there was some discussion at that time as to whether the corn that went out as export that was harvested earlier down south and went through Memphis and on out was actually counted differently than maybe it should have been by USDA. But USDA, well.
I mean, that's been a perennial issue. It's not just relevant to last year. But
Darrell, this is an unfair question, but you get a lot of them from people through the years. But how would you get this CRP issue and how many acres should we really – do we need to have corn and soybeans and wheat to make things flow here?
Well, there's a long answer to that question, Paul. I think the USDA needs to decide early on, and right now, whether they're going to do this in a one-shot change on the CRP or whether they're going to get back into a supply management mode and say, we'll let a few acres out now and then we'll decide next year whether we need more. I think that puts us back into the mode of the old set-aside programs. What should our set-aside be this year? I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think the right way to do it is probably to release a fairly large number of acres in the initial announcement and then leave it alone after that. Clearly, if they do that, I think that will be fairly bearish for all of the major commodities. If they choose instead to let it out in pieces, I think that will certainly be more supportive. The politics kind of push both ways on that.
Mike, I'll let you ask a question in a moment. But what do you think the possibility is that they won't open it up other than to allow, as Farm Bureau asked them, I think, earlier in the week, for those acres to be planted and then used as chopped for feed and not actually put into the marketplace?
I mean, it's hard to get inside the heads at USDA. I don't know what the discussions are. I think not opening up a fairly substantial amount of acreage for cropping would be a major mistake.
Mike?
Darrell, taking out the government intervention, do we know whether these prices have hurt the longer-term structural demand base that we've seen increase? I mean, we see the 12.5 to 13 billion bushel usage these last 2 years. Just 2 years prior to that, we were running 11.2 to 11.3. I know ethanol is part of that, but there's also a lot of feed, a lot of exports. Is this hurting us structurally longer term yet?
I don't really think it is, Mike. Ethanol is here to stay. That was going to move with the energy markets, which seem to be very strong and probably going to stay that way. The last couple hundred million bushels in exports we had was probably really tied to the small wheat crops we've had the last 2 years. So I don't think we're hurting that demand long term. It looks like China will continue to reduce its exports of corn, probably disappear as an exporter. That's probably a long term constructive. I don't think we've done permanent damage. Clearly, end users have to respond to their bottom line and the profitability in the short run.
What do you think, Darrell, when you look at the wheat structure? You know, when we looked at the wheat stocks this year, the on-farm, off-farm, there was only about 10% actually left on-farm and not in the control of others. What do you see as far as an outlook for price on wheat and wheat demand worldwide?
I think we're going to see a very sharp rebound in world wheat consumption, obviously, this year. We've restricted consumption the last 2 years because of short crops. Feed use has declined quite a bit around the world. We're going to see that rebound sharply this year, not only in the U.S., but worldwide. But I think the crop is certainly big enough that we will see some buildup in inventories worldwide. And then bottom line, I think it comes back to the CRP. Do we open up significant acreage now, see a winter wheat response to that this fall? I think clearly that would be fairly negative to the wheat market.
Darrell, the USDA used, I think, in their planting acreage 42.1 and or their March idea in 148.9 on corn and 42.1 on bean yields. Which way are we going to go here when the dust settles in August?
Well, got a lot of weather to go through, and you'd condition that answer saying if we have favorable weather from here on out and we don't have any kind of early killing frost, I think the bean number is pretty close. And frankly, I think the corn number will get bigger than what USDA used in its last supply-demand report. Clearly, that's not the expectation generally, I think, by the market. I think the market thinks we've done a lot of yield damage to corn. I'm still a bit optimistic that, given a chance with the weather, that corn yields will rebound from what appears now to be pretty low expectations.
Darrell, the last time I think you recommended a sale was to come up to 30, maybe 40%. I think it was 30% just after February. And then your suggestion was to go ahead and cover upside protection at that point. After you got your crop insurance on, are you willing to make any new crop sales at this point, corn or soybeans?
Well, it's clearly, as the panel knows, it's hard to make a blanket recommendation. We've got farmers in such wide differing conditions, all the way from too much sold too early and now worried about production to those who are looking at good crops and nothing sold yet. That last category is pretty easy. I think you say, kind of regardless of your price expectations, if you haven't sold anything and you've got a big crop coming on, it's not a bad time to be starting your sales program. But I think, you know, I'm kind of a little bit friendly prices near term, but I'm becoming a bit more bearish post-harvest. So I think we need to be fairly aggressive here over the next month.
Thanks much, Darrell. Darrell Good is Extension Ag Economist at the University of Illinois. Mike Zuzulo, a panelist with us this afternoon. A final word from you, please.
Well, we got to remember, I think, that rice is the basic staple for over 2 million Asians and the wheat for another billion. So I think that wheat and rice market are still our leaders here, even after the weather market, Todd.
Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Have a safe 4th of July weekend.
And Jackie Vakes.
The very same thing for me. Have a good one.
And our thanks to our panelists in the studio, Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group. She's headquartered out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Here's a quick review of some of the rest of the numbers we did not get to. July wheat settled at 872.75, down 22.75 from last week's settlement price. And the live cattle future settled 103.80, down $1.30. The August feeder cattle at 111.57.5 were down 15 cents. And the July lean hogs settled 72.27.5, down 92.5. Oats finished the week at $4.55, up 23 cents. Something to keep in mind, you can visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And listen to this program anytime you'd like. It's right there as an MP3 file, as a dial-up file, and as a podcast. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good 4th of July weekend.